This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, we'll be joined by Michigan Campaign Finance Network Director Craig Mauger to discuss new legislation in the state Senate, which he says would give too much power to super PACs. But first, the group Voters Not Politicians is holding a town hall forum on Thursday in Battle Creek. The group wants to put a proposal before voters that would change the way district boundaries are drawn for Congress and the state legislature. Joe Schwartz, who represented Battle Creek while in Congress and before that in the state legislature, will be one of the leaders of Thursday's town hall meeting at St. Thomas Episcopal Church on Van Buren Street East in Battle Creek. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So why do you support this proposal, Voters Not Politicians, to change the way the districts are drawn and they say eliminate gerrymandering?
Well, we're a very heavily gerrymandered state. One only has to look at our congressional districts in the southern half of the Lower Peninsula, and you'll understand how badly gerrymandered we are. My favorite congressman, as far as a guy who served long and honorably, John Dingell, used to say the first thing that you consider when you draw district lines is common community interest. And if you look at the districts in the southern half of the Lower Peninsula in Michigan, which is, you know, a huge percentage of our population, a lot of districts show no common community interest whatsoever and show an awful lot of partisan gerrymandering.
You were part of the legislature for two different reapportionment processes where the state legislature draws the new lines based on census numbers.
Correct.
1990 and 2000.
Actually, 1990 and 2000, yeah, when I was in the legislature, yes.
Mm-hmm. So that second time around in 2000, the Republicans had control of the House, Senate, and the governorship, and most of the state Supreme Court justices were Republicans.
That's true.
Had been nominated by the Republican
Party.
That's
true.
At that time, did you think as a Republican that you were jamming the Democrats more or less?
I was aware of it. I was not as aware of it and conscientious about it as I should have been, as were numbers of my colleagues in the state Senate. Once you sit down and think about it, you understand that the way we did it then and the way we still do it is really not fair and does in no way represents the idea of common community interest when you draw congressional district lines or legislative lines.
So the group Voters Not Politicians proposes a 13-member commission. How do you find 13 people who are knowledgeable about how to draw district maps in a way that's fair and equitable, but also who you can kind of screen out people who might be overly partisan and have an interest in trying to make the advantage for their party?
Well, the ground rules are pretty clear, and that is that it can't be anybody who's recently held office. They've got to be out 6 years. They've got to be four people who pretty much identify themselves as Republicans, four as Democrats, four independents, and another. The rules are such that it would be pretty hard to game the system. And the people that are picked, should this pass, aren't going to be people who want to game the system. They want it to be fair. If you have, you know, within 2 or 3 percentage points, the same number of Democrats and same number of Republicans voting in statewide elections for the Democratic or the Republican candidate, president, governor, U.S. senator, secretary of state, attorney general, and we have a congressional delegation of 14, which is 9 Republicans and 5 Democrats, or a state senate, which is 27 Republicans and 11 Democrats, or a state House of Representatives, which is 63 Republicans and 47 Democrats, you understand that that doesn't look like 50-50 to me or anything close to it, and it's when good old Elbridge Gerry would jump out of his grave and do a dance if he saw the way we draw our lines in Michigan. We are badly gerrymandered.
Elbridge Gerry is the inventor of gerrymandering?
Elbridge Gerry was the governor of the state of Massachusetts in the first decade of the 19th century. And that's how the name came about. They drew legislative lines in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. One of them, they said, looked like a salamander, therefore gerrymander. And then the word has stuck.
You know, you just made that point about the balance of the state House and Senate, as well as a congressional delegation. And of course, there were, Democrats will point out in recent elections, they actually got more total votes if you go statewide for instance, state Senate, and yet have this big disadvantage. Should that be the goal, though? Should you say we want a state Senate that roughly represents the statewide total vote for the two parties?
That's the result that you would get if you did it in a fair and impartial fashion, if you drew the lines so that you did have common community interest. I will give you an example. For 90 years, Kalamazoo and Battle Creek were in the same congressional district. Made eminent good sense. It would make eminent good sense today. That ended, I believe, after the 1990 census. And so now Battle Creek has been, and Calhoun County, has been in three different kind of district setups since that time. Kalamazoo is a little more sane. The district represented by Fred Upton makes a lot more sense than the district that Battle Creek is in. But nevertheless, the real consummation Diwali to be wished would be to have Battle Creek and Kalamazoo in the same district with some surrounding territory and surrounding counties to bring you up to that 712,000 number that you need. And there would be common community interest there, which makes a much more effective member of Congress to represent that sort of an area and would be much better for the citizens of the area as well.
You know, if you look around the state, there are only a handful of competitive districts. But it's also true that if you look at the larger cities, that is where voters who tend to vote Democratic tend to be located. They're in Detroit, Ann Arbor, Kalamazoo, which isn't necessarily a larger city, but urban areas are where Democrats tend to congregate. Given that, how many competitive districts can you carve out of this population and again, still respect, common communities of interest?
I think we could do better than we're doing. Let me put it that way. I'm not saying, well, it's going to have to be 7-7. If it's not 7-7, we're not doing our job. But I believe we can draw districts that better recognize what the common community interest is in these various areas. We've used as an example the 14th Congressional District, and
which is currently represented by Brenda Lawrence.
Brenda Lawrence, yeah. And Gary Peters represented it prior to his election to the U.S. Senate. But I would ask everyone when you have a chance to pull it up on your office computer screen and take a look at the 14th. It was chosen by the New York Times as one of the five most gerrymandered districts in the United States, starting in southwest Detroit in the old Del Rey area, going up the Detroit River to the Grosse Pointes, to 8 Mile Road, the Macomb-Wayne County border, then heading west down 8 Mile Road until you get to Southfield, then dipping down into Southfield, and then going north, with the one exception where it's not in the 14th, going north kind of wobbly route up and including Pontiac. Now, common community interest there escapes me. I don't think there is any. There are other districts that look perhaps equally as strange, but the 14th is the poster child.
You have been a critic of dysfunction at the legislative level, and you've also decried the political polarization we currently experience. You're a critic of a number of ideas. You don't like term limits. You're a critic of too much money being funneled into elections and being done secretly. If we're going to look, though, at all of the things that might contribute to that, where would you put gerrymandering in terms of what it does to our political process?
I would put it right up there with term limits and money very closely. The course I teach at the University of Michigan, and I'm now in my 11th year teaching, has to do with Congress and the state legislatures. And the issues that I deal with, I think, on more days than any other issue, are gerrymandering and term limits and campaign finance issues. And there really need to be some changes. And the unfortunate thing is that the man on the street, the woman on the street, don't understand how badly we're gerrymandered. They don't understand that term limits has hurt our legislature. It's the Michigan legislature. God love them. These are good people. I'm not saying they're bad people. They are good people. But you can't learn to be a good legislator with three terms in the state house. A very few will move on to the Senate, but nevertheless, you're looking at a $60 billion budget. You've got a lot of things to do. You have to become a specialist in things. They don't have time. And then they move on, and some newbies come in, and the same thing happens over and over again. Term limits was a bad deal, and actually I strongly feel that would be the next thing we need to get rid of. It'll be tough, but we should. One more thing on that.
Go ahead. 25
states originally had term limits. I chaired the National Conference of State Legislatures Study Group on Term Limits 20 years ago. And at the height of term limits, 25 states had term limits. The number now is 15. So 10 states have either repealed, if they were statutory, or their state Supreme Courts have said they're unconstitutional, and they've gotten rid of them that way. So term limits are not a good deal.
Well, as you mentioned, it would be tough to get rid of term limits, but let me ask you about this particular petition drive. How tough is it going to be to even get this on the ballot in 2018 so voters can decide it one way or another?
I think we'll get it on the ballot. I'm not terribly worried about that. We want to collect 500,000 signatures, so we have somewhere around 250,000 valid signatures, which is what we're going to need, more or less. I think we'll be fine there. The problem is, as we've said before, is going to be able to find the money to back this up and let people know that this would be good for the state of Michigan. And that means we're going to have to find not a couple of great big donors, because I don't think they're out there, but a lot of people who are willing to give small amounts to push this issue.
There's a conventional wisdom right now about even getting on the ballot that you need over $1 million to pay people to collect petition signatures. Are there people right now who are being paid to collect petition signatures?
Yes, there are paid signature collectors out there now. And if you go to almost any public event now, in fact, I went to the University of Michigan football game on Saturday. There were signature collectors outside the stadium last week and the week before that, also at Michigan State. Because I went to a game at Michigan State 3 weeks ago when Michigan played down in Dallas, and there were signature collectors there as well. So they're out there.
I want to ask you about another topic, which we're actually going to hear your name come up in our second segment today, regarding the Super PAC bill, which has been passed by the state Senate. The state House is expected to take it up. What are your specific concerns? And you know, how does a voter, how are they going to feel this if candidates are allowed to solicit unlimited amounts of money for Super PACs?
Well, this is the Michigan version of Citizens United. I think it's Senate Bill 355 is what it is. And basically, a big contributor can come in and give money to a super PAC, and the super PAC then will have the money, and the super PAC can dump that money behind a given candidate without any acknowledgement whatsoever of where the money actually came from originally. So it's the term of art is dark money, and it is dark money, and it now is going to be pervasive. Not only in congressional races in the state, in U.S. Senate races, but it's going to be pervasive in legislative races. And you're not going to know who the big supporters are of individuals. You'll see somebody buy thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars worth of ads and say, where in the world did he or she get that money? It's a bad situation. I can tell you, having served many years in the legislature, a few years in the Congress, that's the bane of a good legislative body, is all the money that comes in, because the money always has strings on it, and it's pretty hard for a lot of people who hold office to say no to money, but we're going to have to.
You, as I mentioned, you were a Republican lawmaker and a Republican in Congress. These days, what do you tell people about your partisan affiliation?
I'm an independent. Love them both. Love the Republicans. Love the Democrats. But I'm an independent. I feel more comfortable that way, and I feel much easier about being in opposition to something one party or the other might stand for, or being in favor of some issue that one party or the other might stand for. I can't go as far right as the Republicans have gone. I can't go as far left as a lot of Democrats have gone. I'm a Millikan Republican, center-right. There are a few of us left, and we really are basically independents now.
Just a few seconds. How many of there are you left out there, Millikan Republicans?
The answer is not many, but they're around. I run into people that I served in the Senate with. Dandy Groh from from Port Huron is a great example of a moderate Republican, and he just retired as a intermediate school district superintendent in St. Clair County. But there were Millikan Republicans. There were center right Republicans who worked very closely with center left Democrats in the age, and doesn't happen anymore.
Joe Schwartz, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks very much. Nice to be with you, Gordon.
Joe Schwartz is a former congressman and state lawmaker from Battle Creek. He will lead a town hall meeting on redistricting reform Thursday afternoon. That begins at 4 o'clock at St. Thomas Episcopal Church on Van Buren Street East in Battle Creek. And now a correction. In that interview, Joe Schwartz said that Voters Not Politicians is using paid petition circulators to gather signatures and try to get the issue on the ballot. Schwartz says that that was an error, and the signatures are being collected by volunteers. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The state Senate approved legislation on Thursday that would allow candidates to raise unlimited amounts of money for super PACs. The House could vote on the legislation this week. Michigan Campaign Finance Network Director Craig Mauger has previously said that this legislation would amount to Citizens United on steroids. Greg Mauger joins us from the Michigan Public Radio Network studios in Lansing. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
The defense we will hear of this bill is that this is just keeping in line with the Supreme Court decision on Citizens United. How does it go beyond Citizens United?
Yeah, I encourage your listeners, as boring as all of that sounds, I encourage them to pay attention to this and try to grasp what's going on here to the largest extent possible, because this is really in the weeds of how politicians raise money in Lansing. Basically, the Citizens United decision, it's an extremely long decision, but the important part of it is it says that government can put no limits on independent spending by corporations and labor unions in our elections. The important word in that is independent. The court was trying to weigh the idea that we need to limit the appearance of corruption and corruption in our government while also realizing that freedom of speech is a value that we uphold greatly in this country. So the way they did that is by saying people can spend anything they want as long as they do it independently of candidates, of office holders. Because if they were giving the money directly to office holders, campaigns, the court has recognized previously that there could be an appearance of corruption, and that's why we have things like campaign contribution limits. If someone in Michigan wanted to give to one of the candidates running for governor, an individual, they could only give $6,800 to their campaign. So the question is, how does this bill go above Citizens United? Well, while Citizens United said the spending has to be independent, this bill sets out to define what independence is, and it says that independence is not broken if a candidate is fundraising for the super PAC, the independent spender. So a candidate could go out and ask a donor to give $1 million to a super PAC that's going to support that candidate, and that independence would still be there under this bill. Similarly, the bill also says, very clearly that super PACs, these independent spenders, and candidates' campaigns can share some employees, some campaign consultants. And as long as they don't convey certain information about what's going on with the candidate's campaign, that's okay. The problem is here that the concern is that it's allowing candidates to work so closely with these supposedly independent groups that it's going to make a lot of people question, and I question, how independent these groups really are.
The bill passed in the Senate with all of the Democrats opposed, and also two Republicans, including Margaret O'Brien, who represents Kalamazoo County in the state Senate. She voted against it. But Senate Majority Leader Arlen Meekhoff denies that the bill has any sort of a partisan advantage. Let's hear a little bit from State Senate Majority Leader Arlen Meekhoff.
I don't think it's Democrat or Republican. It's all people have free speech regardless of how they're organized. That includes unions.
Craig Mauger, is it a free speech issue?
I would say no, and I will continue to make that argument. This bill is not about the freedom of speech. The freedom of speech is the expression of the viewpoint that these people want to get out there. So the court has said, they can do that independently of the campaigns. That's recognized. That's already out there. People will see tons of super PAC ads in the upcoming election and probably did in the last few elections. Those ads are allowed. Groups can spend independently as much as they want in our elections. What is at stake here? The heart of this bill is how closely those independent spenders can work with the actual office holders, the people who will be voting yes or no, the people that are there to represent constituents. The question here is how closely can they work together? And that's not a freedom of speech issue. The ability of a donor to hand a check directly to a senator or a House member is not a free speech issue. The viewpoint that they want to cast out there is allowed to be cast out there. Other states have looked at this and tried to limit the ability of these checks, these unlimited checks, to be solicited by lawmakers. At the federal level, under federal guidelines, a candidate for president could only solicit $5,000 to a super PAC that supports them. So this goes beyond what others are doing. I don't think it's a freedom of speech issue. The ability for a super PAC that's independent and a campaign to share consultants, I don't think is about anyone's speech. I think what it's really about is someone's ability to make money off both the super PAC and the candidate. And I'm talking about campaign consultants who do this work.
Okay, specifically to his point about a partisan advantage, he says, you know, the unions can do this. Of course, the corporations can take part. So if everybody is coming into the fight with the same amount of firepower, should we be that concerned about it?
I like the way you asked that question. If everyone's coming into the fight with the same amount of firepower, that's the heart of this issue. It's not a partisan thing. It's the firepower. Someone who's a billionaire in Michigan has a lot more firepower in this system than someone who doesn't have that kind of wealth to their name. And that's what one of the things at stake here is someone who has a ton of wealth is going to be able to go to these fundraisers. They're going to get the special invite to the fundraiser. They're going to be able to hand their huge check to the candidate directly. And then the organization that the check is ultimately going to benefit can then, you know, work somewhat closely with the candidate's campaign. It's not a partisan thing. It's about who has that firepower and empowering people who can write really large checks over those who can't. You know, we studied in the 2016 election where the money came from for the independent spenders in state elections. And half of the money that the top 20 independent spenders got came from just 12 sources. 12 out of this entire state. So, I mean, I think your question is definitely on the mark.
Former Congressman and state lawmaker Joe Schwartz of Battle Creek, he's now a member of the board of directors with the Michigan League of Conservation Voters and issued a statement. The Gongwer News Service says that basically former Congressman Schwartz says that it's hard to believe that your elected representative is looking out for your best interest when he or she receives undocumented and unlimited financial contributions from anyone and everyone. Would you agree that that is what has been set up, assuming that this Senate bill ultimately becomes law?
Well, I mean, we kind of have a system that's already allowing that. And this bill would definitely encourage that. And there's no way it's doing anything to take on the problems that we have in this state with transparency and ethics. I mean, we're ranked 50th out of all 50 states for our systems to encourage transparency and accountability. That's from the Center for Public Integrity. I think this bill is going to make it more difficult to follow the money for sure, to trace who's asking for the donation, who the money is ultimately benefiting, and who's giving the contributions. I mean, that's the important thing to think about with Citizens United as well. When you talk about corporations' ability to give, a lot of people will kind of off the top think about corporations they know, you know, Walmart, utility companies, you know, these corporations that they run into every day. You know, corporate entities can also be, an LLC that was set up yesterday and started giving campaign money the next day. Things get murky in this realm, and you've seen that at the federal level. It's been very difficult to track where a large amount of the money going to super PACs is coming from. And as we see here, the states are kind of moving in that direction.
And you're saying that Michigan is already really bad when it comes to transparency, and if this bill does ultimately become law, it's going to get worse.
I think this bill does nothing to remedy where we're at, and I think as money moves into this corporate giving world, where more and more of campaign giving shifts from individuals giving to candidates' campaigns to corporations giving to super PACs that may or may not be working extremely closely with the office holder, it's going to become extremely more difficult to track the money. And it's not just me saying, you know, we're 50th out of 50. It's the Center for Public Integrity. People can go on there and look at the metrics that they use to get that ranking. The metrics were basically like, what does your law say on this? What does your law say on this? It's not really open for interpretation. interpretation, that our laws are extremely weak in this area.
So if this does become law, what would you say that voters in Michigan, and for that matter, just citizens, people who watch television and see, you know, political commercials come up during the breaks or open their mailbox and find campaign mail waiting for them, what can they expect if this becomes the law of Michigan?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that we're moving in this direction already, even without this bill. This bill could speed things up a little bit and could amplify it a bit. But what they can expect to see is messages to be much more negative, because often the negative attack ads come from these outside groups, not from the candidates themselves. So when you're bolstering super PACs, they're going to be sending out a lot more negative attack ads, and you're going to see a lot more advertising. I mean, a lot of the money that is raised is spent on TV advertising, and as more and more money pours into our political system, there will be more and more TV ads, and they'll be more negative.
The Senate passed a similar bill during the last term, and it never made it out of the House. Do you think that there is the possibility that there could be some reluctance to approve this bill, maybe some public pressure that encourages lawmakers to take another look at it?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the state senators yesterday made a statement on the Senate floor that his office had received 300 responses to this bill, and all but seven we're encouraging him to vote no. So there is public pressure happening on this, as what, you know, we've seen this with past campaign finance bills, however, that public pressure has not been able to stop what the legislature is doing. Arlen Meekhoff, the Senate Majority Leader, has essentially stated that he's got an agreement from the House that this bill is going to be put up there, and it seems like he thinks it's going to get a yes vote in the House. But what actually happens and how the votes break down, that all remains to be seen. The House has very rapidly scheduled a committee hearing for early Tuesday morning to talk about this bill. So it seems like they're setting it up to move it quickly through the chamber.
One of the things we talk with you frequently about, Craig, is dark money, contributions where we don't know the source, who gave it. Does this allow contributions to get to places and maybe put up one more level of secrecy or one more barrier that makes it tough for, say, people like you to find out exactly who is giving money and what they're trying to influence?
Yeah, I mean, I think it will encourage that. It's going to encourage the idea of, you know, people giving money where it's impossible to track. A lot of it's going to be left up to how the Secretary of State interprets the law and enforces it. But what we have seen previously is we've seen dark money nonprofit organizations able to give checks to a super PAC that then runs a TV ad. We've seen that happen. It's documented in Michigan at the state level. So it wouldn't be shocking if that happens and continues to happen. But I mean, these dark money groups can already run as many ads as they want in our state, as long as they don't use those very important words of vote for or vote against. So it will be interesting to see if some of the dark money spending shifts over to this super PAC spending. That's all going to play out in 2018 for the first time if this bill becomes a law. And, you know, all indications are is that 2018 is going to be one of the most expensive elections in state history, if not the most expensive. So it will be fascinating to watch all this.
And does that make it, from the standpoint of someone like yourself who looks at how this money is spent and raised, maybe the worst time for this sort of thing to pass, when you're talking about a very expensive election on the horizon, and now you're talking about ways that make it easier to give and keep the money trail from getting into the public view?
I mean, I would say the cost of our elections is trending upwards election cycle after election cycle. So, I mean, it seems like until something changes or who knows what happens, this is going to continue to happen. The cost of the election is going to go up, up, up. It's just a matter of how much it's going to go up and what is the public's ability to see who's writing the checks and who's receiving the checks. And that's going to be complicated by this bill.
Craig Mauger, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Craig Mauger is the director of the Michigan Campaign Finance Network. He joined us from the Michigan Public Radio Network studios in Lansing. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.